Hello. European dream is not even, it's not even a dream. The European reality is here. I don't even need to introduce this podcast in the normal way because this is well and truly as special as it gets, Maz. I'm joined with Maz right here, mate. How are you doing?
Mate, I am on top of the world, baby. It's an incredible feeling. I'm up, incredible atmosphere, incredible day. How about you, mate? How did you get on?
Yeah, sorry, technical difficulties, ladies and gentlemen, with the old microphone here. But yes, very good, very, very good. I mean, you can't describe these sort of moments, right? I haven't felt like that before a game since Wigan, and I stand by that. I think, you know, it's the most nervous I've been for a football match. You know, when there's so much riding on something, and I think it was shown with the players. They were very nervy those sort of first 20 minutes. I think that it was really weird atmosphere. It's funny you mentioned atmosphere because I wanted to bring this up later on in the podcast, but I thought it was really flat until sort of the last sort of half an hour or so. Maybe it was just the nerves. Everyone was just so unsettled.
Do you know what? I was actually being nice. I actually agree with you. I'll be honest. Yeah. Even when the goals went in, it was like, yeah, it didn't really feel, I don't know.
And after the game, it was great.
Definitely. Like, look, my perception of atmosphere now is a little bit skewed because I was very lucky to go to the Luton game and the Middlesbrough games up for the playoff semis. Mm. And I'm not going to lie, the atmospheres in those games, and I know there's a lot of stake, a lot on the line. And to be fair, similarly to us as well. But those atmosphere in those stadiums were incredible. Like, you couldn't hear yourself. And I just, I don't know, it didn't feel like that at the Amex. But look, we've talked about it in the past. We know we're not exactly the most volatile, you know, cauldron of a stadium. We know
that. Like, we had it with Chelsea a lot. That Chelsea game was very loud. That's probably the loudest I've heard it. I think actually the one that really did break the barrier, I think, in my opinion, I think it was Sheffield Wednesday in the playoffs back in the day when Dunk first scored. That sort of first 20 minutes. And then also the one I mentioned, the Chelsea game, but also most recently was Alexis McAllister's penalty at Man United. I haven't heard a celebration as loud as that one. I think that one's probably the loudest I've heard the Amex. But yeah, you're right. It wasn't loud until sort of the last maybe 20 minutes, then it was a bit flat because obviously Walcott, and we'll get onto the goals in a bit, but we thought that was going to be 2-2, and maybe it was just the nerves around the stadium because we've seen it so many times, haven't we, that Brighton sort of throw it away historically. But look, it doesn't matter because we've rewritten history, and I tell you what, Roberto De Zerbi, take your hat off to him because, my God, what a man he's been. What a signing he's been by Bloom, and who's ultimately the one to thank in all of this. But we'll get into all of that. To begin with, let's talk about the football because, it was... I don't know about you, Maz, but I was thinking, oh my God, is it just going to be one of them? Because Mitoma had, I think, two massive chances. Go on.
That one, the one that obviously stuck in my brain was the one where, he's pretty much one-on-one when the... So, you know, it was actually really funny because, you know, when they started going, ole, ole,
all the Southampton fans,
they were like, and then Bednarek slipped and Mitoma was in one-on-one and he just put it wide. Like, I thought it was a goal. I was like, I was celebrating. One and up. And then he's put it wide and I was like, oh God, like you said, is it one of those afternoons where just things aren't going to go? But luckily for us, McCarthy had a bit of a clanger for the first, didn't he? It sort of went through him.
With Fizz Ferguson's on that shot, though. My God, he struck didn't he?
Look, I mean, look, Ferguson's an absolute player, by the way. Like, I just love everything about him. I was saying, actually, to my mates who I was sitting with, I said to them, I said, the difference, I think, in my opinion, with Ferguson and Welbeck is just sort of miles apart. And again, this is no discredit to Welbeck. It's just, I think it just shows how good Ferguson is. I think the difference up top with him there than any other striker we have in our squad at the moment, I think he's just so good. He's physically so good. He's on the ball. He's brilliant. Even off the ball, the runs he makes. He's just a very intelligent and incredible footballer. So, he's strong. He's like, look, he's not Haaland levels, but like he gives me Haaland vibes.
He's that sort of player, though, and he's Haaland. That big sort of number nine, very clinical, quick as well. You put Ferguson in that City team, he's probably scoring quite a lot of goals, to be honest, the amount of chances they create.
But, 100%.
I mean, the way he's been playing for us is very good. I think the only thing that I would say about him is just make sure he stays fit. That's my biggest concerns with Evan is he has had a few injuries. Only minor ones, don't get me wrong. He's had a couple of ankle problems, but it's players like him historically, you know, they're so good and then they get injured and you just don't want them to be out too much and for it to cost
them. The what ifs.
Yeah, the what if player, a bit like Tarek, and you know, it's such a shame how it's panned out for him, because Tarek, remember that first sort of lockdown, like those first few games, mate, he was genuinely the best right back in the league for a solid month.
Yeah,
and I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, everyone said about how like Chelsea made such a bad mistake letting him go, and you know how good he was under at Brighton, and then unfortunately,
he just took on everyone. He was best player. No one could get near him. It was mad. And then, unfortunately, injuries. It's just one of those. And hopefully, you know, with Evan, we don't have a similar thing. But let's focus on the positive, is that it was a good... Yeah, okay, bad goalkeeping. It was very bad goalkeeping, actually. But good shot. He struck it well. Straight through him. It took me by surprise. I really didn't think that was going to end up in the back of the net. The second one, though, was crafted out of just perfection, wasn't it? The way that Mitoma, that outside of the boots, sort of curls back around and perfectly weighted in towards Evan Ferguson, tucks it. It's such a lovely finish as well, by the way. What a goal. Beautifully created by our Japanese maestro, wasn't it, Maz?
Yeah. The first goal really sort of settled my nerves a bit. I think I needed that first goal just to settle the nerves a little bit, get us, you know... Right, okay, cool, we're 1-0 up. And like you said, the second goal, beautifully crafted by Mitoma, who actually I thought was really good, actually, for most parts.
I think that
form's really... Yeah, exactly, his finishing let him down, but his general play was really good, actually. And, like you said, beautiful cross and a great, great finish from Ferguson. I think that's what it is. With Evan Ferguson, his finishing... We talk about Undav's finishing. I feel like Evan Ferguson's finishing is just phenomenal. He's got
Are very good. Like, they're very good in front of goal. As I always say about Undav, if you're given the ball in the 18-yard box, he's probably going to get a shot on target. And Ferguson's just that, but well-rounded. He's such a complete forward. He's all over the place, really. Hassles so much. And I was a bit disappointed to see him come off, and I'm probably sure he was as well, because he probably fancied a hat trick there. Do you reckon?
Yeah, mate. He actually looked a bit not fuming. It's not the right word, but he did look a bit annoyed when he's coming off. No, 100%. You're on a Premier League hat trick, and deserve is that? Yeah, you're off, lad.
It's like Haaland, isn't it, with City? Pep just takes him off. He scored five. He's like, nah, coming off, mate. It's like, what? I'm going to score 10, mate. Literally.
Yeah, breaking every Premier League record. And he's like, nah, not today. He looked a bit annoyed. But I think, do you know what? I quite like that. I think that shows, again...
Managing him.
A sort of a mentality. Yeah, exactly. He's like, he's hungry for goals, and he wants to stay on and do his best for the team. But a great performance for him. And I was really happy for him to get his brace.
Yeah, agree. It had to be him, didn't it, really? When you've got him back in the team, we all sort of know what he's like. And for the 18-year-old to score the two goals, I know inevitably it did get to the legend himself. We will get to that in a bit. But for Ferguson to really break the ice was really important for us, because if he didn't, you know, this game, it could have been different. Because we saw, second 100%. Half, Southampton, I've got to give it to him. I thought they played so much better in this game, and... Then I saw them at St Mary's for a start, but also then I've seen them for most of the season. I didn't think that the game was as cut and dry as the 3-1 suggested.
No, 100%. I think, I don't know if this is like a fact, well, it's not a fact, obviously, it's just an opinion, but I feel like whenever a team gets relegated, you know, with games to go, the pressure gets off them, is lifted. So they're like, look, we're relegated already, boys. Like, let's just play our football and not worry about the pressures of staying up or whatever it might be, whatever you're fighting for. Those pressures get lifted. So I think, that you could see that in that Southampton team. Like, mate, Walcott just pulled back the years. I thought, like, every time he had the ball, every time he had the ball, he looked dangerous. And I was like, oh my God, like, Theo Walcott's just turning back the time.
Mate, do you know what's so funny you say that? Me and my dad were like, Walcott is just, he's that big name, isn't he? The past player, you're like, he's just going to have a good game. I was like, he's going to score. Yeah. And then, to be fair, we thought he had. But before we get onto that one, we need to talk about that corner. Why are we so bad for set pieces?
I'm gonna be real with you. I completely missed it. I'm not gonna lie. I was looking at the North Stand for some reason. I saw something going on. So I'm not gonna lie to you. I completely missed it. I haven't had a chance to look back.
It was like, but I knew so it was from dodgy. A set piece. It was near post. He sort of flicked it. It was similar to the Undav own goal, really. You know, those sort of near post flicks. I always think near post flicks are the best way to attack a corner, because like they're so dangerous. As soon as that ball's fizzing across, it could go anywhere, and that's sort of what they did. Ward-Prowse's set piece ability is so good, and he's just fizzed it in.
Mate, every time he stepped up for a free, do you remember, What part was it? The first half? Second half? When he stepped up for a free kick, and I was like, "Oh God, he's going to score!"
I think you're right.
He's going to score.
Remember, but and then
I was like, "Oh my God, thank God!" But yeah, we all know what he's like from set pieces. And usually speaking, like from set piece record, our set piece piece record is not great. I mean, look, we're not exactly the tallest of squads or tallest of teams, so that's always going to be an issue at set pieces. But yeah, look, it didn't help because it sort of then thought, like you said, the tide turned and we just looked like a bit of a mess. I remember there was a period of like 3-4 minutes where
Stupinian, I never slate him ever. I think he's a great player. But my God, he gave the ball. It was about 10 minutes of that game where Purvis just lost all footballing ability. And I was like, what's going on?
He forgot how to play football for 10 minutes.
Yeah. And then Duncan Levi, all of a sudden, like, I'm raving about these boys as like the best English defenders. And then they're getting beaten on the counter every time. And I was just thinking, what's going on here? And I genuinely thought we're going to throw this away. And I didn't think that it was offside. I've looked at it back and we're talking this. And we've got to keep the same energy because, you know, if it was the other way around, I'm fuming, right? And I think that, you know, that's very, very, very harsh. And it's a different game if that counts.
I mean, first of all, before we get into the offside decision, the finish on Walcott, mate, fair play. Like, just to dink it over steel like that. I was like, do you know what? He raced
through.
We can
laugh about it now.
Fuck. yeah, exactly.
We could be like, it's all right.
I'm not exaggerating, Ryan. When that goal went in, I kid you not, I felt my hand fell in my hand.
Literally same. I was like this.
For a good 30 seconds, I looked at the ground, and it's funny enough, this guy next to me thought I was looking for something. And I was like, no, I've just got my head in my hands.
I'm just depressed, mate.
I'm fuming here. Yeah, I'm just depressed, mate. Yeah, I'm just about to end it all. I'm going to jump off the annex in a second, mate.
It was hard.
I had like a 30-second thing where I was like, oh my God, I can't believe we've blown a 2-0 lead. I just can't believe this has happened. And like in the back of my mind, I was like, fair play, good finish from Walcott. But then, like you said, the offside, obviously, because do you remember, for our goal, for the second goal, I thought it was going to get reviewed for some reason. Because it felt like a foul, wasn't it?
In the build-up,
that's it. On the other side of the pitch.
Matoma sort of turned his man and it's not a foul, right? But, you know,
That's exactly the moment. And I thought, right, that's going to go to VAR. But obviously the screen didn't come on. So I was like, okay, cool. We're cool. And then obviously for the Walcott one, it came flashed up saying VAR check. And I was like, oh my God. This could be it. I've seen the replays that you've seen. And yeah, look, we're talking minimal, like a toe. But if you go by the letter of the law, if we're going to be like that guy, you know, it is offside, But I know what you're saying. Like, if that had happened to us, we'd be fuming. Like, imagine that cost us Europe. We'd be absolutely seething. Yeah. So I get both sides. If you go by the letter of the law, it's offside. But
it's just got to be fixed, isn't it? Like, it is just stupid. Like, it's stupid, minuscule. You can't. What advantage has he gained in that? You know, it's nothing.
Even if you're talking about, like, right, like, imagine Southampton was still playing to stay up. So, like, imagine that. Yeah. Like, you've gone from 2-0 down to potentially 2-0, changing the game. And they were on top at that point. They were, like, that 5 minutes, they were really battering us, to be honest. For a little bit of a period of time. And imagine that, they're playing to stay up, and then you get ruled out for a toe. I get both sides, but it is what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, what I will say is one that's just true. It boggles your mind sometimes as to the decisions in this league. It's just a good job it didn't mean anything for either team in the end. But what I will say is let's move away from the officials. I can't bother to be complaining about officials on another podcast, to be honest with you, especially on a day like this.
Let's be happy today.
Let's just talk about the performances of... I wanted to pick out particularly, obviously, Caicedo's and everyone like this, and McAllister, I thought, had a great game. But Levi Colwill looked really composed alongside Dunk. Apart from that sort of funny 10 minutes that they had, sort of the whole team had in that moment. But I thought they just looked so good. And before we get onto the goals and everything, all I want to say is, Maz, he is liking some posts on social media, perhaps suggesting, you know, Levi Colwill, we want you to stay. He liked the post. I'm just saying, I'm not saying anything. But could you see it happening, Maz? Or are we just becoming Leeds fans over Ben White?
Ben White 2.0.
He wants to stay.
I would... Yeah. Look, I'll be honest. Like, he was, he, like you said, he liked the video. Obviously, that you can read into that what you will. He obviously showed a lot of love to the fans after. Yeah. We're really clutching onto straws here. But he showed a lot of love to the fans, and obviously they showed him a lot of love as well. Look, I'll be real. I just can't see it happening, because I think there's been talks that he's very much liked by the whole Chelsea.
It's the money in it is going to be the problem at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Money. And I know they're not. Look, the good thing for us at our advantage is we're playing European football and Chelsea aren't, which is obviously a huge draw. However, let's be real. If we're going to be realistic here, most likely 9 times out of 10 they're going to bounce back next season, and they're going to get European football next season. So is
Red
he?
Bowley is, you a know, clown. From
yeah, well, yeah, definitely. I agree with that statement. But maybe Colwell's looking at it. Look, one season out of Europe isn't the end of the world. I can bounce back with Chelsea next season, and we can get European football, and then go on to potentially Champions League the season after. So he's maybe thinking sort of the longevity for it. Like, is Chelsea a better club long term? You could argue that till the cows come home. But in his mind, he's probably going to have to say, look, Chelsea's a better prospect long term. And is Brighton's success going to be sustained? I think, you know, anyone could sort of, again, argue that. I personally believe we will have like a long period of success, but, you know, casuals might not think that. And, you know, your average Joe's.
Do you know
Joe's...
what? I think that there's definitely like talk, you know, if I was to put it that way, of Colwell loving it here. I mean, it's obvious he does. You can't make that up. He clearly does. By the way, just take your phone away from the mic. He clearly does love it, right? There's no denying that. I think ultimately what it's going to come down to is the price tags, unfortunately. I think it's going to be one of those where Chelsea are going to want, what, 60 million, probably? Mm-hmm. Like, at minimum, because they're going to play hardball with us, probably.
Because of Cucurella. They're going to get
Cucurella. Perhaps deal. We've got the advantage of saying, yeah, well, you want Sanchez and, you know, he's probably going to leave next season. You know, maybe there's something in that. I hope that we can, you know, I trust Tony Bloom fully. If it gets to a situation of we could do it, I think we should. Would you spend the sort of regions of 50 million, 60 million on Levi?
That's so mad, because I was literally about to ask you that same question.
Yeah.
Do you know what? In today's terms, that's actually not that much money
anymore.
That's
what I'm saying.
That's the crazy thing. Considering what was that? Cucurella was around 60 million, wasn't he?
Look at him.
So, yeah, I mean, look. Do you know what? In today's terms,
we've got the money
of his
now.
Age, we've got the money. We're going to sell Mikalos and Caicedo, most likely. Again, I don't want to put words into people's mouths, but most likely, well, definitely McAllister, but
from
most likely
confirmed,
Caicedo
just,
as well.
Just expectations.
Nothing, yeah, just speculation. But look, we've got the, like you said, we've got the budget. I think I would pay. I would pay up to 50 million, I think.
Yeah.
I think I'd pay 50 million. But it's, because, look, he's only had one full-fledged season in the Premier League, so you're probably thinking, is he worth that? But I would say yes.
To put it on it, by the way, and I think he's a quality player, by the way. I'm not taking anything away from him. But Forrest spent $45 million on Morgan Gibbs-White. And I think Gibbs-White's a great player. And I think he's worth the money now. But at the time, you know, they're getting him from Wolves. He's a rival. $45 million for an unproven, I think he's, what, 21, 22? For me, I mean, Levi, the one time I'd break the bank, and I could imagine... you know, I know we've sort of done it on João Pedro, but it's not, you know, we're not talking 60s, you know, 50s, 60s. I think the one time I can imagine Tony Bloom pulling that trigger is for a player that's been here and gets it and has been around the squad, is liked it. And there's no doubts over him here because he's been here for a year, if you know what I'm trying to say. So there's no worries about him settling in. There's no worries about him potentially flopping because we know he's not going to because we know he works in this team. So that's the one thing I think that we'd say is, yes, we've got the European stuff, yes, all that. But I think the one thing that we can say comfortably from a purely player point of view is, you know, he's been here before. And I think that could possibly be the one thing if I was to be Tony Bloom to say, get him.
Well, like you said, he's got the buy-in, hasn't he? So he knows what he's getting with us. He's already, you know, had a whole season under his belt at Brighton. He knows the facilities, knows the players, knows the backroom staff. Like you said, it's all familiar settings for him. And I think the key thing as well, having a naturally left-footed ball-playing centre-half like Levi Colwill will be huge to us. So, like, we all know the benefits to us. I suppose it's just convincing him the benefits of coming to us. I suppose it's just, you know, this is what you can get from us. This is the long-term plan.
And taking probably is the one thing that you'd have to say is, look, you can get more money at Chelsea, but you could probably become a better player here. What would you want to do? Do you fancy a career? Do you fancy the money?
Exactly. And it's the same with like Caicedo, for example. Like, the time's on their side. I know as a player you want to develop and you want to get to the top as quickly as you can. Yeah. But sometimes you've got to think, like, is the grass greener on the other side? And, you know, for example, they're both 21 years old. So they've still got like at least another 2-3 years of development years, let alone their peak years. So, yeah, look, I know what I'd do as a player, but I'm not a player. And I know I'm biased because I'm a Brighton fan. But, yeah, I think I know what I'd do. I think if I was Caicedo, I'd stay. And if I was Levi Colwill, I would definitely try and get a permanent deal. But, yeah, that's just our opinion, isn't it?
It's funny you say about being biased as a Brighton fan, because I think that even if you were to switch it completely around and say that, I don't know, we were, I don't even know, Chelsea fans, and, I don't know, we had a player on loan from Newcastle, right, completely worlds reversed, where Chelsea are a small club, irrelevant, and we were Chelsea fans, and Newcastle were the biggest club in the world, which is probably going to happen anyway with their money. So, I'd say the same thing, purely on career perspective, it would make more sense to go one way or another, because you're going to improve as a player in the process. I think that's the one thing that I always think, but, you know, footballers unfortunately don't work like that sometimes.
Yeah. Money talks, Ryan, unfortunately.
If people were waving, you know, the percentages that he's going to be being waived, and I'd probably be, you know, thinking, oh, you know, I could, you know.
Well, you're like, this big spiel, I want to do it. Think of the career, and then, money.
It's unfortunate reality of life, but anyway. But it's a good debate, anyway. It's a good debate on Levi. And I do hope, anyway, to end it off, is that he does stay. That's just ultimately.
Yeah, fingers
crossed.
Of course
I do. I think he's a great player. I think he seems like a good kid. Clearly loved by the club. He clearly loves the club. Let's try spend the money, Tony, if you got it, mate. And we'll move on to the sort of latter end of the second half. Obviously, Southampton had their moments, and then we sort of established ourselves again, had a few chances. Yeah, we had a lot of shots, actually, to be fair. I didn't realise how quite many we had. So I looked at the stats. It was something like 23, 24.
Oh, wow.
Which, you know, I didn't realise it was that many. And then obviously we did get the sort of third goal. That's a bit of a sigh of relief. Pascal Gross. How biblical, by the way, for Pascal Gross to hit that. He's the man.
Love
from
it.
6 years ago yesterday, or the day before that, where he signed for us or something like that. And then all of a sudden, he scored our first goal ever in the Premier League. And now he scored the goal to equal the all-time record Brighton top scorer in the Premier League to send us to Europe. Not just Europe, but Europa League, because let's face it, we're going to be playing Europa League. Yeah. We ain't going to lose 8-0 on the Wednesday and 8-0 again. So, Europa League, Pascal Gross, Maz, just what an absolute icon.
Yeah, incredible. Like you say, he's just, what he means to this club, and for it to be him to have scored that sort of sealed the result and really put it to bed, I think, like you said, it was incredible. And it shows just by his celebration, like the passion he showed when he ran over to the fans, and it just shows how much it means to him, let alone to us as fans.
He cried at full time, didn't he?
Yeah, it's an incredible team. And his journey as well. Like, we talk about, like, I just want to talk quickly about Dunkey's, obviously, journey from League One to the Europe in 12 years. That journey, that. Well, as a club, we
love that.
12 years we've done that journey, which is just incredible to think about that. Like, we were in League One, or like in the depths of the lower leagues, and we're now playing European football. Like, that's just mental. Like, I remember watching Brighton at the Wydeen against Northwich Victoria, when Jake Robinson scored a hat trick, and it's like, I've gone from that, sitting in the fucking family stand in the J block in Wydeen, to now witnessing European football. Is just mental. That moment just meant everything. And I've got to shout out someone who, in a bad way, a chap called Simon, who sits next to me. He said, and I quote, before Pascal shot, he goes, he doesn't have a left foot. And I was like, and he just absolutely walloped it with his left foot. I was like, mate. And then everyone in front of us, I was like, can you just say that every time he goes for a shot, please? I mean, look, again, left footed strike, brilliant strike. And it was just incredible to see what it meant to everyone. And I'm so happy it was him.
Yeah, I agree. He's top, top, top player, and not just top player, top individual as well. I mean, what he's done for this club, and I hope he never tarnishes it with a move to Todd Bowley's Chelsea or something crazy. But what I can say is he's been unbelievable, and he's been an absolute icon. And you know, words don't describe Pascal Gross to Brighton fans, and it shouldn't do to most football fans as well. His stats in the Premier League speak for themselves. He's got 36 assists, and he's now got 26 Premier League goals. He's also the second highest chance creator since 2017 when he joined. I mean, those sort of stats, you'd think we're talking about a Manchester City player, but we're not. We're talking about a Brighton player who's been seriously so good. But Pascal, what a man. And you're right to mention Lewis Dunk as well, just to add on to that, because that journey, what you mentioned, you know, League One, as you say, it's insane when you think about the short time frame. You know, as you say, it doesn't feel long ago you're at the With Dean, it doesn't feel long ago I was in school, and, you know, you've got these people saying, bantering you, saying you're going to go back down to where you belong in League One, and, you know, I could call you all out, but I'm not going to, because I don't even speak to anyone anymore. But, you know, it's just funny because how it's changed in such a short space of time. You know, we're talking 6, 7, 8 years, and in that time we've become one of the best teams in the league, in the Premier League. You know, that's I'm having a moment here thinking about it, thinking, oh my god, like that's the same time, you know, and in
it's,
8 years
only, it's only when it's you mad. Say it, yeah, it's only when you say it out loud it sort of sets in, really, like the achievement this club's, you know, this how much it means. And I know there was a bit of talk online, I saw there was a bit of debate between sort of the older fans and the younger fans about, you know, what means more. Yeah, you know, what means more? Is it like, you know, being on the brink of existence? I know, yeah. But, you know, one thing I will say on this, and I hope this sort of like comes out right, I think I don't like this whole comparison thing. It's like, look, all these achievements we've done is incredible in their own way. Of course, look, being on the brink of non-existence, of course, that was an incredible moment in our history. But then equally, making Europe for the first time ever is equally as impressive. So yeah. I don't like this whole to and fro between the younger fans and the older fans. Like, let's just enjoy it. Like, I know it sounds cliche, but just enjoy. Don't compare. Like, comparison is the thief of joy. So I think just don't compare. Just enjoy the good times, no matter when they happen. Look, every part of history is incredible in its own way, and hence why it's history. So, you know, just enjoy the good times, and each moment is just as biblical and amazing as the other. So yeah, just look, let's not argue amongst ourselves, let's just enjoy what's going on, and how incredible this club's been.
It's a shame that it sort of has to result in that sometimes, because you just think, like, yeah, really? You know what I mean? Like, really? We're really arguing over, you know, what was better, over Hereford, over promotion, over League One, over, you know what I mean? How can you compare these
all
moments?
Incredible
because
moments.
They're different, you know? Like, you can't call, you know, factually, this is the best team we've ever had, right? Because we've got the best sort of athletes, and we've got the best technicians, everything, right?
Correct.
This is the best team, right? But then for us to go and then say, I don't know, our players that perhaps haven't played much for us, like saying Robert Sanchez, for example, who hasn't turned up in the last sort of few games and whatever, and for them to us then go and say, yeah, he's better than Michel Kuipers, right? It's true, because he's a better goalkeeper, but for what he's done for the club, everyone's going to have Kuipers. So this is what I'm trying to say. There's no comparison over these moments, and it equally goes back down to Hereford and further beyond. But yeah, you're right in saying 100%. It doesn't make sense.
And then final thing, just to sort of wrap this little bit up, I think it's so important to remember as well, like, in terms of online as well, and I suppose anyone who lives online or, you know, has social media accounts, look, we can all have our opinions, we can all have our things. It doesn't mean one person is wrong. Like, that's what an opinion is, an opinion. So that's why I always see online, it's like, no, you're wrong. It's like, no, it's my opinion. You know, like, for example, myself and you, we have healthy debates when we talk about Brighton and what we think is
deep,
right.
Though, like, I'm not going to come out, you know.
Exactly. Like, just one message to people that are, you know, those trolls online or whatever. Look, we can all have our opinions. We can all have our differing opinions. We can all agree to disagree. That's fine. But not one person is right and not one person is wrong. It's just you have a different opinion. And also, people come from different eras. Like, you know, like we said, the older gen come from a different era to what we come to. You know, I'm sort of in the middle. You're obviously a bit younger than me, but I'm like in the middle sort of thing. And it's like, I don't shit on the younger people.
I'd say
shit on the older people.
You're
like, it's just
you're still in our younger generation. Like you still.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I'm not that old yet, right?
But you're discounting yourself from us. I'm thinking, no. Yeah. You're definitely like, I know more people that act older than you, and they're like only just the same age as me. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many people that are different, right?
Yeah, I am quite immature, to be fair.
But anyway, that's funny.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but anyway, yes. Stop arguing with each other, for God's sake. We're in European football. Yeah. Enjoy it.
Yeah,
but what we'll love say it. Is, Lewis Dunk. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Lewis Dunk. To top it all off, everything great that's happening at the moment. I don't know if you saw David Ornstein and Andy Naylor has tweeted today that Lewis Dunk is in serious contention for an England recall. How long have we been saying it on this podcast? It would be enough to drive you up the wall, but it looks like it could genuinely be happening now, Maz. It's taken us to become a literal Big Six club for it to happen. But your thoughts?
Yeah, about damn time, to be honest. he deserves everything for him. Like, I've known him since I was like 21. Obviously, I don't stay in touch with him like that much. But whenever we see each other, we have a good chat, good catch up, and like, it's just incredible to see.
We all saw it.
We all saw it. Yeah, of course, I was going to mention that. If you haven't seen it already, Jacob, put the video in.
Roll
that clip. Now, all joking aside, like, I'm so happy for him to see where he's come from. Where he's been, and sort of the journey. Obviously, he's had his trials and tribulations, which I'm, you know, Crystal Palace fans love reminding us of. But he's come through the hard times, and just to see him get another England cap. Of course, USA was his first one. But for him to get another one, I think just shows his hard work. And I know a lot of people like to shit on him and say he's a standard defender or an average defender. But we as Brighton fans get to see him every week, and we see his qualities, what he brings, not only on the pitch, but off the pitch, the leadership, how much the lads love him. Like, I even just from watching that little parade at the end, like, you know, the chats he was having with the players, his family, you know, his little kids came on the pitch. Like, he's everything about him oozes just a brilliant guy, and he cares so much about the club, and committed his future obviously a couple of seasons back now, and he's just an all-round top bloke and a quality player. I think that goes under the radar a lot, and to see him get another cap would be completely justified, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's done so much for the club. I mean, he's essentially put us on the map, hasn't he, really? Not through the fact of him being sort of a multi-superstar, because, you know, he's not really got that sort of fame like he probably should do. But what he has done is he's been such a solid performer for so many years. Yes, it's come with the mistakes, and people will send the photos of him on the floor or whatever. But how do I even put it into words? The significance of this man in our last sort of, particularly those 3 years, since 4 years, since Graham Potter came in, changed the club. And you know, he went from being that maybe a rational centre-half who's good at blocking stuff but sometimes gets it wrong, to an all-round ball-playing centre-half who can play in so many diverse, you know, very, very unique and very, very sort of first of its kind, should I say, especially when Potter started doing it and when De Zerbi started doing it. It was very new. And Lewis Dunk levelled up, and he levelled up again, and he levelled up again. And that's the one reason as to why, and I'm sure, Maz, you agree, we cannot understand how he hasn't got that England call up sooner. Because I know I'd argue personally, he was better a couple of years ago than he is probably now. Yeah. I thought that 2021 season is probably the best version of Lewis Dunk I've ever seen. And he didn't get called up, and then we went to the Euros without him. And I think, to be honest, we could have done with him, to be fair, sometimes. And I think that Maguire, you know, although he's good for England, I'd argue Dunk's way, way better than him. And fast forward 2 years, I'd say, Maguire's out of the question. But I think him and Stones are genuinely two of the best performers, English performers, in the league.
No, agreed. No, I think that's the crazy thing, is that people don't quite realise the talent pool, especially at centre-half for England. Like, going forward, we've got incredible talent. Like, I could understand, let's say, if he was a winger, you know, like Solly March, for example, you know, he was on the brink of making an England call-up, but then you could argue, look, we've got Saka, Grealish, you know, Sterling,
Foden,
like, just
Foden,
like, an incredible talent pool going forward. But when you look at the centre-half positions, like you said, Ryan, is there really anyone better at English than those two at the moment? Stones, obviously, you know, he's had a brilliant season.
Could make a case for Levi Colwill to be in that mention, to be fair.
No, I mean,
Adam Webster's been a bit injury prone, unfortunately, for him, but Levi, yeah. I mean, if I was Gareth, I'd be looking at him as well, to be honest with you. I'd be 100%. Looking at both of them.
Yeah, and like even and you know, there's other people that again Palace fans, you know, Mark Gahey bringing him up in conversation and stuff. And yeah, I like him. Yeah, I like him. Look, credit where credit's due. But like, yeah. I just feel like Dunkey, like you said, is probably up there with the top at least top four English centre backs right now.
Yeah,
so he deserves a squad place at least.
Yeah,
the very
I mean, you got John Stones, Gahey. To be fair, I do rate him. I actually do rate him. He normally is pretty good. Lewis Dunk, obviously. I mentioned Levi Colwill. I don't think that you can put Maguire. You can't put Cody. Mings, to be fair, has been pretty decent for Villa recently. I'll give him that. So
Dyer has been dire.
Yeah, he has been dire. I'd actually say that Mings has dramatically improved, and I would go as far to say I take what I said back about him, because I do actually rate him a bit more now. He's been good for Villa.
Yeah,
no, fair. I think he's got to be in there. So yeah, we'll soon see. But it's point of the matter is it's a perfectly sort of well-rounded moment as to how it's come about. You know, we've just got to Europe. We have now got an England call-up for Lewis Dunk, potentially, anyway. Maz, I don't know if there's anything else you want to add, mate, but I'm sure there's probably a lot more in regards to the actual fan feeling, but I mean just, you know, players and off-the-pitch stuff.
Yeah, no. I mean, look, like we touched on it, obviously, the if you haven't checked it out, make sure you go check out Dunkey's video to Seagull Social. It is confirmed. He is a Seagull Social Ultra, Lewis Dunk.
Yeah.
So that's confirmed. He loves our podcast. The club captain, by the way, and club legend, loves Seagull Social. So you should also like it as well. Yeah, exactly, by default. And then, of course, Moises Caicedo as well. I actually shouted at him and said, "Are you staying, Moises?"
I saw that.
And he actually smiled for a photo, but I took that as that means he's staying. So thank you, Moises, for the confirmation.
Oh God! As we say about the immature thing, this is them that we saw.
Literally, you're bang on. Just basically, if you haven't checked out all our content on socials, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff, make sure you do. We were posting quite a bit on there. But now, Ryan, I think, mate, we've done a good job of covering the incredible season. Yeah. I know we've got two more games to go, but City midweek and, of course, Villa on the last day, which now, thankfully, and I'm so happy about this, is a bit of a dead rubber, to be honest, because it doesn't really matter what we do. We are going to Europe, and it's pretty much confirmed that we're going to be finishing in sixth, albeit a 18-goal swing, so which I doubt is going to happen unless Man City and Villa both turn into prime Barca 2009, and we're all doomed. But yeah, I think we should.
Mate, if we lose by 8-0 in two games in a row, then fair enough.
Play.
I'll give up with football. I'll never watch football again.
I'll just stand up and applaud. I think I'll be like, fair play. Like,
I'm on my knees
to win 9-0.
my stupid light's gone off, so that's really annoying, to be honest with you. But it is looking nice, though. But yeah, we'll wrap it up. But yes, what I will say is, yeah, we Villa wise, we'll do a preview. But
yeah,
come on now, and also City. Come on now, we ain't losing 8-0. Come on, and if anything, Pep Guardiola loves us enough anyway. He'll take it easy. He's not going to put 8 past us. He loves to see him in Europa. Yes, thank you all for listening. And just to round it all off, really, what a moment, an absolutely unbelievable moment. Should not be underestimated as to how important this is, because it is, in my opinion, anyway, the most fruitious moment in the club's history. It is by far the biggest moment in regards to what this club can achieve. To be able to get European football should not be frowned upon by any means. The only thing now is how we respond from it in the following season, because as we all know, it can also end in tears. But for now, enjoy the moment, because God, should we? It's been a long time coming, hasn't it? And the amount of pain we've been through, not only in the last ever, but also in this season alone, it's been a lot of pain.
The
Graham Potter stuff, it's been mad.
To quote Jack Albion, it's a roller coaster. You just got to ride it.
You have indeed. And that's pretty much this season. But everything comes back around, ladies and gentlemen. As we've seen, it is well and truly, it's just magical, to be honest with you. It goes past words. It was meant to be from the start. But thank you all for listening, because that is a very, very good podcast. I've very much enjoyed myself on this one. We'll see you soon.
That was brilliant.
It was brilliant. And we'll do sort of a bigger
comments down below. Just do, we're going on a European tour. Just put that in the comments down below. We're going on a European tour.
And if you think of anything funky as well, go with it. I want to hear some fun stuff because I want to hear some stories, Maz. I want to hear what people have got up to in celebrations.
I like that.
I want to hear some stories. I want to know what people have. If you got drunk, if you didn't get drunk, you don't have to drink. It doesn't matter if you don't. I want to hear people's stories as to what they got up to in regards to celebration. How much fun you've had? Because you should be having fun right now. What's not to love? And also say all
love that, Ryan. I love that.
But we'll see you for a bit more that. Of a like sort of end of the season thing once it's all over with Ben as well. It's be a bit easier once this crew's together and we don't have to rush together a 40-minute episode. But till then, we'll see you very soon. And make sure you like, comment, subscribe, do all that good stuff. Follow our socials at Seagull Social, of course. And we'll see you after City. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Peace.